Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, family. I'm laughing because I'm going over the notes for today and the balls of some people to do and say some of the things that they do and say never ceases to amaze me. But, hey, what you gonna do, right? What you gonna do? This week, after the shooting in Nevada, Vegas specifically, wanted to bring some folks on to talk about that. Was not able to secure any folks as of yet for Puerto Rico. However, Brother Ward might be able to shed some light on that too. Brian Ward is going to join us later on. Now, he actually specializes in anti-terrorism, so I wanted to bring him on, even though mass media has not acknowledge the shootings in Las Vegas as being a terrorist act. Damn sure pretty much looks like that to me. So reached out to him to bring him on so he could speak his piece to and on and on about that. I wanted to talk about the president's proposal. It just pains me. It pains me to allow those words to escape my mouth. I can't even say mouth. I'll say mouth for this dude. It really hurts me to my core. But the orange one has said that he's going to strip the contraceptive portion, the mandate to provide contraception to women, that was a part of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Lawsuits have already been filed in respect and in regards to that, as I knew they would. Never mind. That was after the orange one says that he's going to decertify the nuclear arms agreement that we have with Iran. The orange one says, in a cryptic way, that this is the calm before the storm. What storm? What calm? Just, you know, a young man came to me, not this week, but last week, started a new job. He says, hey, Lee, you know, to be honest with you, man, I've done pretty well for myself here. I've done so well that I've been promoted, yet I've not really had an opportunity to hone my skills and build my skill set to match the level that I feel that I need to really be efficient and effective for my promotion. So I said, okay, well, what do you need? And he turns to me and he says, in all honesty, everything, because I've been used more in a clerical position than in a leadership position. So I really need to hone and craft those skills, blah, blah, blah. So I said, look, first lesson I can give to you, in all honesty, is command. When you're in command, command. You've been hired to make a decision. Make a decision. If it goes left of where you thought it was going to go, make another decision. That's what you're paid for. You're paid to make decisions. Every decision you make isn't going to be the greatest decision. That's okay. What hurts us, what kills us, what takes away all your power is your ineffectiveness or your inability to say, okay, that didn't work out so good. Let's go this way. And obviously, you know, there needs to be some thought about you changing gears. You shouldn't just, you know, just be all willy-nilly with changing gears. You should get a good feel for it and look at it, scope it out, look at the landscape and say, okay, look, I made this decision to go this way. That didn't work out so damn good. It didn't work out so damn good because this, I didn't foresee that. Okay, cool. Now I'm seeing it. Okay, so if I move them this way, boom, that's what you need to do. What we're not getting from the orange one, what we're not getting from 45, is that not too long ago, he was praising his generals, how he loved his generals, how he loved the military. Now he's crying about the generals and the leadership in the military, how they seemingly are boxing him in and keeping him from doing what needs to be done for the country. You know, you can only have it but so many ways. And you can't cry. Well, you can. You can cry. You can cry and you can, and you can, well, it's your milk. What do you want to do with it at this point? Because it is. It's his plate of food. So the question now is really, what do you want to do with it? We gotta figure this out and get over this hump because we have him in office for the next 3 years. It's changed. It pains me. It pains me. You just don't know. You really just don't know. Brother Wood, I see you. I got you. You're not lost. I got you. He just hit me up there thinking that he wasn't in here. But you in here. You in here. I got you, family. You're early. So I'll continue my thing and then we'll come back to you. It's all good. What was I saying? I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. So, okay, so he's complaining about the general, so on and so forth. The amount of turmoil that we're getting in this administration, again, hardly staffed. This administration is hardly staffed. There's nobody. I put this on Twitter the other day. I said, you know, it's no wonder nothing's happening in Washington. There's nobody there. The cabinet is even more bare than it was when I reported to you all about a month ago, right? We've had Price leave. Tillerson's damn near out the door. because of his stance against the president. NBC comes out this week, breaks story that they got from their sources that in a meeting back in June, July, Tillerson calls the president an idiot, a moron. He gets his knickers all up in a bunch. Now he's on a hunt for Tillerson. However, he can't get rid of Tillerson. Why? Because this week coming, he has to go to China, to Asia, China, specifically Asia in general, to meet with world leaders, and they don't want to throw that apple cart all off, of course, even more than it already is. While he's, you know, in this all-important meeting, these meetings and summits this week coming, so what are you going to do, right? But Tillerson knows that he's not happy. The orange one knows that he's not happy. No fucking body's happy. And we're just moving on like everything is everything. Dog, I've never, ever, ever in my wildest dreams imagined that this is what we would have to put up with from our so-called leadership in our nation's capital. Never would have thought about that. Good morning, Sister Rashi. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. How are you, Brother Lee?
Can
you
I'm
hear me?
I'm interesting this week. Yes.
I'm having some internet issues, so I was trying to make sure I can get. I'm sure I'm late.
It's all good. It's all good. I got a lot to talk about. My first baby mother. I know what I said. My first baby mother was here this week. Actually, this heifer been here for 2 weeks. She calls me in her second week talking about, hey, I'm in Baltimore for training. Oh, for real? Okay, that's what's up. So you want to go out? Yeah, you know, pick me up. Let's go to dinner. All right, cool. So we go to dinner, and we're sitting back and we're talking. So I'm like, okay, well, how's everything going? But she's like, it's cool, but the weather's crazy. Like, when I first got here, whoa. When you first got here? Oh, yeah, I got here last week. Oh, and you just telling me this week? Okay, that's what's up. See what happens when your kids get grown? See what happens when your kids get grown? But it's cool. We had a good
time.
Well,
I see what happens when your relationship get grown and over. I'm trying to figure out what part of her existence has to take up with you. You better leave that lady alone unless you're trying to get her back in trouble.
No. We still cool like that. So, you know what I'm saying? That's all that's about. We just cool. I'm like, damn, you didn't tell me you was here last week. We could have hung out last week. She's like, no. I was like, okay. She missed a couple of good things that I know that she likes to do and whatnot. It just so happened the day she called me, we went out. Professor Griff was here giving a lecture. So we were able to catch dinner and catch him. So that was cool. That was really cool. That was a good time.
He's a newly married man, Professor Griff is. Him and Soleil. He's a newly married, happy.
Soleil?
Got married. Him and Soleil just got married less than 60 days ago.
Hold on. You talking about genuine ex-wife Soleil?
Yeah, genuine ex-wife. I mean, and Professor Griff, his name is Khan Shah. They got married in a beautiful ceremony.
Hold on.
Not too long ago.
I'm sounding bad. You were sounding horrible for a minute there. You're coming through better now, but you were sounding horrible.
So they just got happily married. It was a beautiful ceremony.
Really? I did not know about that at all.
Oh, well, you got a...
They
got a beautiful love saga going on. Greeting each other and... Every morning they wake each other up and they dance together, and they love each other openly on the internet. It's a very interesting relationship.
He like 15 years older than her at least though, right?
Mm-hmm. She found it for a beautiful waterfall crystal. Man, she's good.
All right, I'm not hearing the thing you're saying. You are really sounding horrible. you might want to try to reconnect.
Well, what I wanted to say was she looked real good. Let me try calling on a different line. Call, page me back in, brother. Let me see what I can do.
I got you. No problem. All right, so notwithstanding her and that foolishness, she ain't got to check in with me. But, you know, we still cool like that. We're still good friends. So I would have expected that earlier. Actually, before she came, she's like, yo, I'm coming in for 2 weeks. Let's get together, blah, blah, blah. So I could have actually planned something out and, you know, had a good old time, blah, blah, blah. Because there was a number of things that happened while she was here, again, that she missed out on that I know she liked, and boom. Because yeah, I'm an old-ass man, dog. Look, the other part of this week for me, one of my friends came up from Carolina. It's her birthday today. So she had a shindig down in D.C. last night. Now, you all know. My ass hate D.C. just like I hate Atlanta. I hate that motherfucking place. So, but not as bad as Montgomery still. No, not that bad. But anyhow, so I went down there last night to hang out with her and her friends and all that type jazz. And we're sitting at this restaurant, which was very nice, actually. And to be 100, actually sat there and had myself thinking, like, I might need to come back down to this mug. Because it was really nice. It was cool. It was centrally located. It was easy to park. It was not a lot of things going on in at the restaurant. I really liked it. It was really cool. So, but I'm sitting there, and, like, after about 40 minutes, I was like, yeah, I'm ready to go. They had music playing, so that was, and I mean not just your normal restaurant ambiance type music in the background just chilling. Like, these jokers had a 100% all-out DJ up in this piece. A DJ up in this piece rocking it, and the DJ was rocking it. And that was at the second floor, so the music pretty much permeated from the second floor down to the first floor. Then the third floor, there's a stage up there, and then there was a live band performing up there. Whole lot going on in this restaurant. Again, that's why I was digging it, because it was like, man, you know, depending on my vibe for the day, I could really do a number of different things in this one structure. Plus, the food was really good, and it wasn't extremely overly priced like most shit is in D.C. But, yeah, it was cool. It was real cool. So once I got that all nailed down and nailed up, and I think I stayed for about an hour and a half, but I was definitely out of my element. You know, I'm at a different point in life, as we always do, and it goes back to the premonition, prediction, whatever the hell you want to call it. When I was in Vegas, the brother said to me, he says, 56 days before your birthday, your Earth day, I'm sorry, you tend to go through a lot of turmoil, ups and downs, and it seems to be crazy. 56 days after your Earth day, you tend to find your way. And right now, I've made some changes to help steer me in that way. Because I was doing some things, though very positive, very good, very necessary, they were taking me away from the things that I wanted and or needed to focus on. And I had to recognize and realize that one of the most important things that I have, which is something that I say to people all the time, so, you know, I wasn't taking my own damn advice, is and was my time. I needed to get my time back. And some of the things that I was allowing, that I was giving my time to, though were beneficial, in the bigger scheme of things, it wasn't the move to make. So I had to let those things go. A lot of changes this week, man. I made a lot of changes this week. So again, you know, at the restaurant, we out there cooling, everything was cool. But, you know, I'm hearing the music, I'm watching the people. And I love the people, especially now that I don't drink. You know, it's end of this month, it'll be 20 years, no drink, no alcohol. So it gives you a different perspective once you're out in public and you see people enjoying themselves, getting some drink in them, enjoying themselves a little more, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, that used to be me. Oh, I remember when I did that. You know, it's all the same thing. I love the people. I'm sitting back and I'm like, yeah, this shit just ain't me no more. Like, I don't, the belly isn't for this anymore. I don't have the fire for this. And I've been really wanting to go out. I really want to dance. So today in Atlanta, I'm in Atlanta today. I'm in Atlanta for the weekend.
Oh.
It's like, yo, I'm going out tonight. I'm definitely going out tonight. But even with that, I'm like, I wonder how long I'm going to stay out. So I might call up Deborah and Ray, and I might go to their house tonight just in lieu of going out. I might just do that. Call Wendy, call Deborah, call Ray, and we can all just hang out at Deborah's house tonight. You know what I'm saying? I need to do some things. I want to do some things, and my mind is in a good place, and I want to keep it there. I don't want too many distractions going on because I know me, I can get easily distracted.
Atlanta is distracting in itself. You know, Atlanta can get a lot of people to clip.
I hate that place. I don't like it down there. It's a big ass country
town.
You don't like Atlanta? It is a big
ass country town.
People talk about Atlanta like it's the greatest coming since sliced bread. And I'm like, yo, this is come on. First off, understand that my upbringing, where I come from. So when I go to something like that, when I go to any place, I do not measure it against New York because there's no measure against New York. But I do measure it against. I do measure it against my quality of life and my speed of life. And Atlanta is still a big ass country town, and that's all it is. And actually, it's not even big. All the suburbs that it claims makes it a big ass country town. Now, Houston is different. Houston is big, and then when you add on all the suburbs, it's huge. Atlanta is small, but then when you add on the suburbs, it's big. You know what I'm saying? Because Atlanta itself is small as shit. But once you add on all the suburbs, yeah, it's big. Houston is huge. Houston City proper is huge. I'm sorry, it's big. And then when you add on all the suburbs, it's huge. So, yeah, Atlanta is nothing more than a big-ass country town, man. Like, the first time I was there, I drove through it, and when I got through it, I was like, that's it?
Was that it?
I was in it and out of it so fast. I was like, oh, I thought this place was huge. And then I came to understand, adding Alpharetta and Alpharetta, however
Douglasville,
you want to pronounce it. Marietta, like you said, Douglasville, and, you know,
The charm of Atlanta proper is that you get access to city life, but with, in general, a country style living. That's the whole point of the South. I'm the first generation in my family out of Mississippi. My mother was born there, and I was born.
What part?
Some would say out of the South, but I still consider Missouri the South. So
what part of Mississippi?
My people are from Sunflower County. The most racist part of Mississippi is where my people came from. Sunflower County, Bolivar. Huh?
Is that the Delta?
Not quite, but very. It's close enough. Yeah, we dealt to people, and so I still find value in country living. I haven't grown up far enough from those good old country values to sign off on how good it tastes to crack, you know, dip, pop a snap pea off of the bush and eat it right there. You ain't never had a fresh snap pea, have you?
My
mother act. My mama picked cotton. You see, my grandma.
Your mother picked cotton.
My mama picked cotton.
What the hell?
I know. My mama actually takes pride in how much cotton she can pick in a day's time.
Really?
So you just have to realize that they went. Your family went. So my mama's 65. But that's how long-standing Southern traditions are, that 200, 300 years after slavery, you still – oh, it's people picking cotton right now.
Oh, yeah, I know that. I know that.
Now, they get migrant workers, you know, funds for it. They not slaves on in the game no more. But it's cotton picking is not, we not done with our cotton picking ways. Anyway, so, yeah, once you start valuing, and you need to figure it out, bro, because I fear that we will get to a chance to churn our own butter again. We're going to get to where it's smarter to mend the sock than it is to go buy another pack of socks.
But we already
we're
did.
About to, well, you know, you are, and I am, but there are people who would rather go, you know, they'll buy a pack of socks a day if that's what it is. Rather than literally get the little thing and the string and the needle and put the thing in there and then sew the sock. They don't even know. Like, this is the, that's the big issue with me and what I call you city slickers. Y'all don't even know, like, when the shit hit the fan, y'all can't even shine your own shoes.
Y'all can't even shine your own shoes.
Y'all can't replace your own button on your little dress shirt.
Yo, can I have this conversation with, hey, look, Brother Ward is on. Bryant, we got you, brother. We haven't lost you. I know you tripping right now because you like, what the hell did I get myself into? I got you in a couple minutes. 11:30 is going to be your time. But so I'm planning my high school reunion. And my man says, yo, what should we say about the dress code? I'm like, well, we already said the dress code is semi-formal to formal. Now, you know I'm going to come up in that motherfucker looking like thebomb.com, cleaning in the Board of Health.
But Board of Health with a Ginsu.
There you go. I'm going to be clean as hell. You hear what I'm saying to you? I already got my order in for my shoes. I ordered my shoes. You hear what I'm saying to you? I ain't playing with these jokers. I'm coming hard. But he's like, yo, I'm telling you, some people going to try to sneak up in there or try to come up in there with some Tim's, some Nike boots. Yo, check this out. Your ticket is non-refundable. That is not going to happen. I'm just saying, I understand what you're saying. But we 40-plus. You don't bring your 40-plus ass into a 25-year reunion wearing sneakers, Tim's, or Nike boots. Not going to happen. Put some damn clothes on.
Oh, you mean he can't come in sagging like in his adult rhinestone jeans?
No. So he's like, all right, well, I'm just, all right, whatever. But the point he was making and a point that was echoed was there are some folk who are 40-plus who don't own a pair of dress shoes. Now, I used to work part-time because, you know, I'm always doing something part-time to keep myself busy and out of trouble. And when I say trouble, I mean, you know, not fucking somebody's daughter or wife. But I used to work part-time at Burlington Coat Factory. And I have seen many a man, brown, black, yellow, white, red, come up in Burlington Coat Factory and not know their shirt size, their pant size, their jacket size. And
they put a size 10
shocked
collar on a size 15 neck. I hear you, brother. They don't know a peacoat from a blazer. That's right.
I'm shocked and awe. Like, yo, how you... I've known my collar size since I was 13. I knew my pant size since I was 10. I knew what size pants I wore. How do you not know? This should be basic man 101 type stuff. And these jokers are totally clueless. Like, I have no idea what size pants I wear. Huh? Like, that's my face. I'm like,
they don't know what their instep is. They don't know what their inseam is. They don't know how thick their neck is. They don't know how long their arms are. They don't know what material is appropriate for what occasion. I mean, and that's just being able to show up with when you have the money, when you have the resources. Imagine how clueless these people are when they don't have the resources and they haven't...
Yeah, my wife always shops for me. My mom always shops for me. These are the things that I get all the time from jokers. And I'm like, yo, how do you do that? Like, I don't get it. But everything isn't for me to get, as I've said about a gazillion times on this show and in actual life. You know what I'm saying? But it is 11:30, so it is time for us to switch over and change up on years. Our guest is here this morning. Good morning, Brother Ward. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Brother Lee.
Please
good
say hello
morning,
to Sister
Brother
Rashi.
Ward. How you doing? How you doing this morning, morning, Brother Ward?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well,
thank you. Well,
I'm putting up. I'm putting up with our special friend. So.
Is she talking about me? But it's okay.
Oh, I figure you're a good guy, though.
Hey, man, I'm trying. So this week, the nation was rocked by the sniper taking out 50, almost 60 people in Las Vegas. He rented a room. He moved a cache of weapons to the room. He then proceeded to open fire on a crowded concert venue, country music venue, injuring over 500 individuals and, again, killing almost 60. Now, I don't know where this falls short, but doesn't that sound like terrorism to you? Because if I was in Las Vegas, I would be terrorized. But somehow or another, we have failed to assess the word terrorism or the words terrorist act to this worst mass shooting in modern American history. How does that work that that's not terrorism?
Well, there are several definitions of terrorism. I'll give you one of the basic and most used one. They have classified a definition as committing a terrorist act that perpetrates one's own country against their fellow citizens. The intent is to intimidate or coerce, leading some to call for a change, that change often being in government. So they are without a motive at the moment. So they're saying because the act is without motive, they can't classify it currently as a terrorist act.
All right, so this piece of paper that was left behind, it's just numbers. So,
correct.
You know, first it was, you know, the thought process was maybe this was a suicide note and it turned out not to be that. Or it could very well be, but it's just, you know, encrypted with the numbers versus the letters. So I'm pretty sure some smart people are trying to figure that out. But does it really matter?
It doesn't.
At the end of the day, does it really matter? I mean, this dude, I'm hearing shit, and I'm going to let you jump in because you are the guest and I am the host and I will shut the hell up. But this dude, I'm hearing things about this guy that shouldn't even be coming up, about his wealth and, you know, why would he do these things because he had all this money. And does it matter?
It doesn't. And I think people are trying to put it into a box of what they have defined terrorism as in the past. So they're really trying to link to put a definition on it by defining the motive in it. You know, currently there are no criminal statutes. There is a criminal statute for international terrorism, but not for domestic terrorism. And it can be described as like violent extremists that is limited to Islamic extremists. So they don't really have a direction for it as far as foreign terror organization versus domestic terror. And so what would happen if they start to categorize him and they start putting all these other terrorist groups, which we have quite a few right now in the books under domestic terrorism, is that they would actually have to have an FBI-led investigation every time that they have one. And it would cause a deeper, wider database to be kept and tracked of all the the mass violence that's going on. And so I took the time to label some of them because not a lot of people know that all these domestic terrorist groups out there, just to name a few, which is there are quite a lot more, like the Ku Klux Klan, you know, that's a terrorist group. but also like the Black Liberation Army. That's a terrorist group. It's a, for those who don't know, it's a break off of radical members from the Black Panther Party. You also have like Earth Liberation Front. You have the Aryan Nations. You know, they're a white nationalist neo-Nazi group funded back in the 70s. You have the Army of God. So that's a one. That's a, they want, they use force to try to end abortion in the United States. PETA is also on that list. Yes.
Hold on. Step back one. I never heard of the Army of God before. They're new to
me. Army of God has an FBI-recognized terrorist group, and they use force to do actions to prevent people from trying to go in abortion clinics.
Yeah, I've heard of them. They are extremely, they're hyper-religious. They believe that, what they say in the Bible, they actually have scripture saying that there are people who will be used as weapons in the hand of God, and they want to be considered, they consider themselves voluntary henchmen in the name of the Lord. And so they follow very strictly, they're funded, they're Christian fundamentalists is what they're called.
Exactly right.
You said something that was very compelling. Now, I know we're talking about domestic terrorism, so I don't want to get off on a tangent. But in our definition of what
Please
is
don't.
Terrorism, we have included PETA. Is that what you were saying, PETA? People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals is now considered a terrorist organization?
The organization itself is not an organization. I should clarify that. Thank you. They have committed what has been called terrorist actions, domestic terrorist actions. You know, they have worked in hand with another group called the Animal Liberation Front. They're against people having animals at all, about harming animals.
Yeah.
You know, they think that domesticating animals is probably not our right and things of that nature. You know, so they just have a very different perspective.
Can we have a quick conversation? Because I know we're talking about terrorism and the killing of humans. But let's get to some basic shit. Fido. It's okay for Fido to die. Yeah, I saw this commercial last night. And a surgeon. This dude is a surgeon. Was talking about how his Rottweiler had a broken ACL, and he took the Rottweiler to the hospital to have surgery to repair the Rottweiler's ACL. Let me tell you something. There are homeless people in California. There are homeless people in New Orleans. There are homeless people in every city in the United States of America. If y'all take half that money and put it into just feeding them, I'm not even talking about housing them. I'm simply talking about feeding them. Feeding them. And if you don't want to do the adults, fuck them, do the children. If you just feed the children with half that money that you spending on ACL repair for a damn dog, arthritis medicine for a damn dog, high blood pressure for a damn cat.
Okay, now you have to talk. We're talking about the sanctity of life. Now, life is like, now listen, Lee, okay? What we want to focus on is that there were acts committed. The reason why these organizations have their name on the list is not because of their overall mission plan. They're not on an anti-animal global mission. It's the individuals within the organization who take it on their they take it upon their personal principle to do these heinous acts to other fellow humans on behalf of the rights of the animals. That's what gets them into these terrorist organizations, not the overriding mission of the organization. Would you agree, Brother Ray?
Brother Brian, yes, I agree totally. That's pretty much verbatim. So a lot of these organizations, just by titles, it depends on what it is that they have actually conducted or considered putting a part of. So it's very easily to categorize and group people such as ISIS and Al-Qaeda for the massive destructions and lack of thought for life that they've been conducting. But when we start coming home, we start talking about people within the United States, we can go back in history. I mean, we can go back to Black Wall Street, 1920. We can go back to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where they went in there and killed 3,000 African Americans in a 12-hour span.
Mm-hmm.
You know, jump forward
Rosewood.
A little bit, Rosewood. You know, jump forward 1995, Timothy McVeigh, again, Oklahoma bomber, city bomber. I mean,
yep.
Right there.
Did you just say it's not
ahead.
Safe to live in Oklahoma?
I say there's just been some trendy people out there that have chose some certain locations to make a point. You know, so again, a lot of it comes down to motives. You know, they got it to try to define a motive for the actions that people are doing to give them a proper title or label. I just think so I thought it very unique and troubling that the first thing they wanted to say about Stephen Paddock out there in Las Vegas shooting is that he has something mentally wrong. We normally don't categorize other people. We give them other titles. Not we. They give them other titles such as if a bunch of African Americans, if there was a gang-related incident, they don't call them mental. They call them thugs.
So, yep.
You know, they don't do that.
Well, I do want to say this now, as a therapist, right, as a person who has studied the actual craft, there is something wrong with him. There's something wrong when you willfully hurt someone who has not hurt you. So calling him mental ill is not excusing the behavior. It's actually the proper label. Now, what I want to know is why are we angry over those individuals being properly labeled? Our anger should be over our individuals being improperly labeled. Yeah, they are. They're all. Anyone who hurts someone, well, they would say anyone who hurts someone, period, has mental illness. But anyone who hurts someone who hasn't hurt them, they mark that as the cornerstone as mental illness. All these people are mentally ill. Why are we not using that same brush with them all? It shouldn't be, oh, they only call white people crazy. No, they're all crazy. Now, why don't we have a standard operating procedure for dealing with the mentally ill in public events? That's the question.
Because as you said, you know, I disagree with what you said in the beginning of your statement there. You said it's not to... you said something to the effect that it's not to excuse the behavior, but it is. So you say somebody's mentally ill, and the first thing that does to most people is it plays on their heartstrings. So it's like, oh, well, he really didn't understand what he was doing. So they come, then you're looked at, whomever's looked at in a different light, and if they go before a jury of their peers, quote unquote, then there's some leniency usually granted that person because, again, you understand them as being mentally incapacitated. So, he really didn't understand. So we'll lock him away, but we won't lock him away forever. Or we'll lock him away, but we won't send him to prison. We'll send him to a hospital or whatever.
A rehab.
Versus this person being a thug. So thugs go to prison. Thugs go to prison for a very long time. Thugs go to prison with numbers so big that it's even impossible to comprehend those numbers. 237 years plus life. Dog, what's the use in that? Who's going to live for 237 years? Why don't you just condemn people to natural life?
Going to live that long, come back, go straight to jail at birth, do another 100 years, die, come back, go straight to jail, and then get out in their 30s after their third life.
Right. There you go. So it's like, come on, dog. Is that even necessary? Well, you know, when you get past 60 years for the most part, you look at an individual like, yo, you 20-something years old. 60 is about as long as you're going to live. why are we 89 years plus, you know, like, really? If you 40-something years old, you are not going to live for 89 years. That's just not gonna happen. And even if you do, at that time, yeah, I don't think you're gonna be too much more of a criminal. You know, like, come on, B. Let's be honest. But yeah, I think that we don't have that set vocabulary, that set terminology, because in people's mindsets, when you're a thug, as Brother Ward was saying, if you're a thug, then you go to prison, and you go to prison for a very long time. Once you're insane, once you're mentally incapacitated, poor thing, and you get some leniency, you get a rehab, you get probation, you get a hospital, you get a minimum security facility, you get a low security facility, you get nothing. Like the Apple Windsor kid, you get nothing. You know, he's not responsible for his actions. He wasn't used to being responsible for his actions. So how can he be responsible for his actions now? He's never been held responsible for his actions. He's rich. What kind of shit is that? I'm poor.
Yeah, so you hit it right on the head. So what's called, you know, trying to go back to the topic of this Las Vegas shooter, the money plays a big part of everyone scratching their head, because you had a rich Caucasian guy shooting, killing at a country festival. Right. That adds more complexity to the issue, because you can't validate racism. You can't validate cost of money. He didn't have a manifesto left behind. He didn't leave a clear, decisive note. No phone calls made.
Yeah, he was racist, brother. He was a self-hating racist, and that's what they can't hear. People are more willing to accept the self-hating cultural identity of black people all the time. But it is hard for this country to realize that there's a whole band of white Americans who cannot stand white people in their agenda. They hate racism, white supremacy, and they want to see it fall, and they don't want to benefit anymore, but they're trapped. They're trapped as unwilling participants in a system that they don't want. And so what are they? They're self-hating racists, and it happens in every culture. But for some reason, this culture refuses to accept that there are white, powerful white men who hate their whiteness.
I don't disagree with that. That's deep right there. That's a very good observation.
That's a whole nother topic.
You know,
Is it mental health reform? Talk to me. Is it gun reform? Is it mental health reform? Is it the return of the nuclear family? What is it? What is going to stop?
Nothing's going to stop acts like this.
I think there could be some preventative measures.
Go ahead.
I think there's going to be some preventative measures. Love Trump's hate, just like, I'm sorry for interrupting about that. Also, I think that our gun control laws are a little too lenient. I don't think as a civilization we're ever going to get rid of them. We're not going to become England overnight. Oh, everyone give up your guns, you're good. I think that we're just a little too lenient right now. And the fact that we want to have, just until Obama administration, that President Obama, you could go to a gun show, buy your gun, stick it in your car, and go about your business without nobody doing any type of background check or anything. He just said, hey, you can still go and buy those guns. We just need to make sure that you are mentally and soundly a citizen in good standing in order before you purchase that. Then everyone kind of flipped the script, you know, like, well, he's just trying to track us. Well, they've always been tracking you. If you think Big Brother ain't already watching you, then you're not in reality. So there has to be
that same mental capacity of the settler. Like, how many people?
No, you got it. You made a good point, Brian. So you said Big Brother's always been tracking. Hold on, Rush. You faded and then you faded out. So let me finish my point, then I'll let you jump back in. I was saying you made a good point. You made a good point, Brian, because, you know, all these people got their knickers in a bunch about the the Equifax breach, right? It's like, dog.
Mm-hmm.
And the black what the hell they call it? The black web. Dude, if you got that much money, someone already has your information. If your credit is that good, somebody already got your information. Equifax or not, trust me, it ain't hard. If that is their mission and that is their goal, and you go out here and you swipe your credit card at any point, you make a purchase online at any point, somebody has your information. Trust and believe it. They do something with it, different story. But there are cyber attacks going on all of the time. This isn't a once-a-week type situation. It's not a once-a-month type situation. It's not a once-a-quarter type situation. There are cyber attacks going on all the time because there's always people out here that are on the fringe that are trying to make life easy for them without having to do much work at all. And that way, the way to do that in this current era is to hack people's information and use the information to buy and do whatever else they want to do. That's it. Didn't y'all see the internet? The net with Sandra Bullock. The same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, come on now.
Enemy
on.
Of the state.
Hollywood. Hollywood gives you the real. You just take the shit as entertainment. Like, oh, that was cool. They could never do that. Okay.
Yeah.
I was telling somebody the other day. 20 it's been almost 30 years ago now. Moonraker, James Bond, Moonraker. They had the laser fired weapons, right? Like Star Wars. It's like, oh man, that's cute, that's cool. Ah man, they probably get that in like 50 years from now. Dog, if they put it in a movie, the shit is real now. You know what I'm saying? I don't get what you don't get about that. If they put it in the movie, it's real now. The conceptualize something like that totally out of the blue. It's damn near impossible. It's not. It's very much improbable. The fact that the Navy released to CNN footage of the same type of weapon that's being used now. Like, this was like a couple months ago. This is when the whole Korea thing was kicking off. Like, dude, don't think that weapon just all of a sudden got mounted onto a ship. That's been in R&D for years. It's been out on the seas for years. Now they just decided to declassify. Oh, yeah, by the way, we got this sitting over here. Just in case y'all didn't know already. Yeah, this right here, just in case. Just mind y'all, we got this right here. Just because you want to be stupid. Come on now. Yeah, no. But going back to Vegas, trying to stick in that vein, is it gun control? No, because you're right. We're not going to flip to a European model. We're not going to actually apply the Second Amendment as it was intended, which was to muskets. You know, no one thought you would be sitting around with the AR. Everybody have an AR-15 and a Uzi in their home. That wasn't it. The A4 now? The automatic fire shotgun. Nobody. Come on now. The founding fathers did not think that you was going to have a 50 cal bear in your home. Right. You know what I'm saying? Come
right.
on now. Nah, come on now. What you need
okay,
for?
So what? Okay, so we're going to buy the gun, and nobody's going to check to see if we got the – do we regulate the bullets? Here, have the gun, but you can't have – I mean, you know how, like the comedians say, if you had to pay $5,000 for every bullet you shot, you would buy the gun, but you would use more discernment with whoever you was willing to spend that $5,000 bullet on. Like, what is
right.
it? Do we tax – you know how we tax – soda and we tax cigarettes? Do we tax gun enthusiasts? You understand? What do we do with these people who've decided that they're going to be justice? They're going to make order. They're going to be our new sheriff. Or they just want us all to suffer. They just want us all to cry and be afraid to leave our houses and be afraid to send our children to school. What do we do?
Well,
you go first, and I'll come back.
Okay. Being a gun owner myself, I have several guns myself. I'm prior military, retired, 22 years Air Force. Having those guns, I think I have a personal yes, sir. Having those guns, I think I have a responsibility to myself and anyone else in my surroundings to be safe about them and to know their true meaning. So I think it comes down to a bunch of education. Now, criminals don't give a crap about none of that stuff I just said. Criminals think I need a gun for the purpose of intimidating or to kill or maim someone for my own advantage points. So those people who are criminals, I think they should just be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. Now, other people who have it for self-defense and stuff like that, if you live on a farm, even if you live in a city, it don't really matter. I think that you don't have a reason to use those if you have a strong law enforcement presence that are doing community policing. So if they're feeling that they're safe and all those things, they don't feel they need to take matters into their own hands. Easier said than done. I understand all that, but that is a measure I think that needs to be considered.
Instead of giving folks guns, give folks jobs. And I'm not talking about, you know, working at a factory or anything like that. Job numbers came out this week. We lost 33,000 jobs in September. That was the first loss of jobs in over the past 7 years. Now, the cry about the job loss is because of the hurricanes. Well, economists had already factored the hurricanes into the equation, and they were anticipating that we would gain 90,000 jobs, even after the effect of the hurricanes were taken into play. Why? Because there have been huge gains in the insurance industry, because people are going out filing claims, the auto industry, people had to come back to work to build new cars, the home improvement, the home building industry. Why? Because people's houses need to be fixed. When I was in Vegas, Kurt the Flirt took me to the, I forget what the thing, the symposium for carpet cleaners. Every carpet cleaner in that symposium in Vegas had one word out of their mouth: Houston, Houston, Houston. You going to Houston? You going to Houston? You going to Houston? Every last one of them. Every last booth we went to, we're talking about, hey, you take this with you, you take this to Houston, you can clean up, literally and figuratively. There is a boom happening in respect to hiring right now because of Florida, because of Houston. So what is the real reason for this 33,000 loss of jobs? Different story for a different time. But you give people an opportunity to, somebody's too close to a TV, there's too much background noise on somebody. You give folks an opportunity.
Yes, that would be Brother Way. Brother, I think you can get to us quieter, because I'm hearing the whole children's party, and I want a piece of cake.
Yes, sorry.
So you get to a point where you give folks an opportunity to make money, and you busy them with the work of providing for their families instead of busying them. I'm sorry, giving them too much damn time. You know, idle time is the idle hands are the devil's workshop. And I don't believe in the devil, but I'm just saying, you know, shit, crazy shit happens when you got too much damn time on your hands. A lot of bad shit happens when you got too much damn time on your hands. So you give folks an opportunity to make money, to provide for themselves, to provide for their family legally, and that will eradicate that. And we can do that because we still have millions upon millions of jobs openings in the United States of America. Hence the reason we have such a robust immigration policy to bring folks in who have the credentials to work in Silicon Valley, who have the credentials to work at Chicago, research labs or research hospitals in Chicago, in Philadelphia, in Houston, in Cleveland, so on and so forth. Why don't we take those same assets, those same values and instill upon our children here. These fuckers are not lost. They have nothing to do. No one is showing them a way other than what they have seen other people do in order to just survive. Not even to live, but to survive. And there's a huge difference between surviving and living. And I want to say that these kids, and some of them are adults, are not that damn lost. But somebody needs to step up and give them what they are missing. And we as a society have to be that somebody. It goes back to the old African proverb. It takes a village to raise a child. And if this child is not getting what they need from their mother, their father, their aunts, their uncles, their grandma, whomever, somebody else has to come in and say, yo, look, let me show you this. Here you go. And there's nothing wrong with that. Being so disengaged as we are right now is killing us as a society. That's where we are. We have to re-engage these children. We have to get these, we have to show these babies that there's another way. You don't have to work for somebody all the time. You can work for yourself. Make a way. It is possible. There are truck driving jobs that are unfulfilled. There are plumbing jobs that are unfulfilled. Heating and air conditioning. Every damn thing is not going to require you to go to college. Every damn thing is not going to require you to work with computers in depth. In depth. You know what I'm saying? There are other ways to make money that are still extremely profitable. Everyone is not meant to go to college. What's the brother's name? What's the brother's name from Philadelphia? That's a damn shame. I got his name in my phone. I actually talked to him. But he said on The Breakfast Club, one of the huge switcheroos that were played on Black America was we went from providing services to one another to white American convincing us that the way to a better tomorrow was to all go to everybody go to college. There's nothing wrong with formalized education, but the thing about formalized education is those are not skills that we can barter and trade with amongst one another, right? So if you're a philosophy major, whom in your community can you barter and trade with on a consistent basis that needs your skill set? But if you are a mechanic, anyone with a car needs your skill set. If you are the guy that comes around and does paving or roofing, if you own a home, everyone in your community that owns a home needs your skill set. And this is the balance that we need to get back to. Everybody should not and cannot go to college. And even if you go to college, that's fine. But you still need to understand that there are some grease monkey professions that will pay you very well that everybody needs you to do in your community. Again, being the HVAC tech, the electrician, the plumber, you can't outsource those jobs. You can't outsource being an electrician. You can't outsource being a plumber. You can't outsource being an HVCA tech. You can't outsource being a mechanic. Those are four jobs that you cannot outsource. Those are four jobs that you cannot get a robot to come in and do today or tomorrow. Those are still good paying jobs that you can have, that you can then pass on to somebody else, whom potentially may be able to pass it on to somebody else before the robots come in and take over. Why are we not doing that? Why are we not guiding these children into these career paths and into these career fields? Everybody cannot be an accountant. Everybody can't be a teacher. There comes a point where there's just too much saturation in those professions where it just doesn't make sense for anyone else to want to be it. Now, teaching is a different story, obviously. You know, we always need teachers. We always need a boatload of teachers. But there comes a point where we have to say, and we have to be about creating a way for ourselves. And this is that point. You know, we have to teach our children to be owners, not workers. You're always going to work for somebody else, and that's cool. But you also need to understand, because even if you're an owner, you're working for somebody else, right? Your clients you work for. You are dependent upon your clients in order to get you the money. So you're always going to work for somebody else. But it's a much better position and play for you to be in an ownership position and be a leader than be in a worker position and be totally subservient to somebody else's balance sheet, somebody else's schedule, so on and so forth. Do you not agree?
I do agree. I think that unfortunately we have lost the importance of passing on legacy, owning property, being business owners. So every time when the next generation come around, that child, whomever, has to buy their own home. They have to start out their own property. They have to go somewhere else to learn about financial management and stuff like that, because we are not passing those skill sets and those assets down. And we're making everyone start over again, which puts us behind. That's my belief.
Yep. I truly believe that. And, you know, the understanding of tomorrow is something that we need to push forward to with these babies, because they don't get that shit either. You know, everything is right now. As we were discussing briefly at the beginning of the show, Rashi, when you talk about repairing the buttons and hemming and sewing and
right.
polishing shoes,
sewing
so on and so
button.
Forth, like,
right,
that's a long term strategy. We've gotten to a point where we're so used to just discarding shit and buying something new. Like, oh yeah, that don't work, so I'll just get something. Hold on, dog. It's just a fuse. It's not broke. It's just a fuse. Replace the fuse.
Brother Lee, do you think mm-hmm. that we're taking that expendability, the way that socks are expendable, or even an old TV because
yep.
it's too big
yes.
in the back, are we putting that
yes.
on each other? Is the reason
yes.
why we're having these masks because we're like sock, we're like old pairs of holy socks to each other? You know, one less
well,
one
not,
of us and no worries? Or what?
Well, it's not only that. It's also the fact that, you know, our lives have been so expendable for so long that you've gotten to a point now where the kids are like, well, shit, if they don't care, why should I? Right? And I've said this before with respect to growing up in the crack era. You have when you not only lose daddy, because, you know, that's Daddy gone. You know, that's painful. That is hurtful. But unfortunately, that's a norm all across our society. White, Asian, black, don't matter. Daddy gone. Mama's always there. But when mama is smoking crack and hooked on drugs, and she gives you nothing as far as love is concerned, You look at yourself like, well, shit, I mean, I must be a piece of shit, because mama's supposed to love me no matter what. Mama's supposed to take care of me no matter what. So if she don't give a fuck about me, why should I give a fuck about anybody else?
Or even myself.
Exactly.
Or even give a
why
fuck
should
about
I care?
Myself, right?
Right. Why should I care?
So, okay,
you don't care
so
about
okay.
me?
So
I don't
would
care
you
about
say
me.
Then
I damn sure don't care about
one
you.
Of our fixes could be then an agreement to be like a community maternal, like I'm trying to put it in words, but if you're saying one of the reasons why we've deemed each other so expendable, not only was our mother out of the home from war or prison or
I have no idea what you're saying because you're breaking up again. But one of our fixes is re-engaging and letting one another know that somebody cares about you. Somebody loves you. Somebody's watching. And that is something, too, that we're missing as a society. We tend to forget that somebody is always watching. Somebody is, and you never know who's watching you. You never know. I shared this before. I'll share it again. High school all-class cookout, two sisters came up to me, and they shared some stuff with me, and it blew my mind because, first off, in high school, I was a herd. I was the dude that hated school. Though I did participate in sports all 4 years, I lettered all 4 years, I was never about school. I'm talking about the spirit of it, not the educational part of it. You know, now, Brian, I don't know how you were, but for me, high school was in the way of me going into the Air Force. So I was like, yo, I don't care about y'all. I'm going to do what I need to do because the next step in my life is going in the Air Force. I knew I wanted to go in the Air Force from day one. I was pumped about that from day one. So, you know, it was really an inconvenience for me going to high school, and I treated it like that. I treated it like an inconvenience. I was like, man, I was like, dude, I just want to get through this joint. So I was not that school spirit dude. I wasn't the, you know, I didn't go on the class trip. I didn't do nothing. Relatively speaking, I did nothing. I didn't go to any of the ring dances. I didn't go to any of the other dances. The only homecoming I went to was senior year, and I was there for 20 minutes, and I left. And the only reason I went that year was because I was a senior, and I wanted to show the fuck off. That was it. I was a senior. I wanted to show off. I did what I did, and I rolled out. You dig what I'm saying to you? So for them to approach me and to share with me that they watched me. They watched me through the entire 4 years. And both of them were fine. Both of them. Back then and to this day, both of them fine. So I was like, oh, they were checking me like that. Like, yo. And they were like, yo, but what we saw in you then, we still see in you now. And we just want to say, yo, got nothing but love and respect for you. It blew my mind. I had no idea. Because even now, over the years, I've seen both of them in passing, and I've spoken, but I didn't put a lot of stock into it. You know, just, hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing, Lee? I didn't know that I could have actually had an in-depth conversation with them, and it would have actually been a very good conversation. That they were even open to having that with me, you know, because I wasn't that dude. I wasn't that dude that was at every event, and they were. They were those sisters that were at every event, you know what I'm saying, all the time, doing it.
Well, okay, so what we're going to say is this. So anything worthwhile has to be handled from different tactical points, right? Any mission has more than one strike mission. So if we wanted to make a dent in the amount of domestic terrorism, the average city citizen, I don't think we can do much about rural terrorism, but we can do something as city folk about whether or not we able to come in and out of a movie theater without somebody shooting us up. One is, what, while you in line at the movie theater, try to be nice to your fellow ticket buyers. Try your best to know whether or not your family members have a mental disability, whether a weapon, maybe something like that. Try to foster a good feeling towards getting therapy in your household so that if you have a family member who is struggling with whether or not they want to hurt other people to show them the kind of pain that they feel inside, you'll know that. Like, I'm trying to figure out what we can do because it's not going to stop. Like Brother Wade said, it's not going to stop. And we get every time they report it, it's like they want to say, this is the worst. Now, this was the worst. People we start phones out surveilling each other? Do we calling 10 people a day? Say if you got 10 friends, make sure you call those people, and those people call 10 people. Do we create a communication so powerful that we know what's going? I don't know exactly what we can do. That's why I keep asking.
See,
is it gun or is it mental, psychological? Every family have a family therapist. You know how you have a family dentist, and you have to have a family therapist in your household.
Alright, again, sis, you're fading in and out a lot, but I got your point. But at the end of the day, I understand where you're coming from. The solution is not singular. As you were just alluding to, as far as the therapy is concerned, calling one another, blah, blah, blah. It's going to have to be multi-pronged, and it's going to have to be not talking but doing. When it does need to be talking in the sense of actually communicating with one another, though, and that starts from the simple things, getting back to kindergarten basics. Kindergarten basics are hello, good morning, good evening, how are you, just speaking to one another. Not texting, not tweeting, not Instagramming, but acknowledging the other person in the room when your ass walk into a room. That starts a trend that you wouldn't even believe. But
Brother
a lot
Lee,
of people don't.
You hit it on the head.
Yes, sir.
I said you hit it on the head. I would go as far as to say the nucleus. So we, to include myself, we are too often knee-jerk reaction to say they have a problem, but internalize the issues that are going on in our community to make sure that our intimate family isn't part of that problem. So you interacting with your kids, with your significant others, how's your day? Don't try to be your kid's friend. I mean, I have this conversation all the time. There'll be a point in time when you guys will be able to relate on this next level, but don't try to be your friend's kids before it's time. You know, be a parent. They don't need you to be a friend. They got them at school. Be a parent.
Right.
Tell them what's right,
right,
what's wrong. Same thing with your friends. If you're a friend of somebody, be just that. You know, a true friend is going to tell you right from wrong. So
right.
Get in each other's business a little bit for their well-being.
Mm.
Not to just be nobody, but for their well-being.
There you go. Look, and, you know, unfortunately, you and I haven't spoken much since our initial meeting. I reached out to you like I told you I would to establish that connection and stuff like that. But I'm one to keep in touch with people. I'm going to call you. I'm going to say, yo, you good? Yo, you all right? Okay, cool. And it's not about, as you just said, getting all up in your mix. It's, I need to hear. So my brother Milton got into a bad accident a couple years ago. And Todd, our oldest brother, he lives in Vegas. So Milton was getting better, and he was getting right, so on and so forth, you know, going through therapy and all that type of stuff. So Todd was leaning on me like, yo, you go see Milton. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, I'm going. And I was. I was going up, spending time with Milt, making sure everything was good, blah, 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 blah. Todd called me one day. He said, yo, how Milt doing? I said, oh, man, he's much better, blah, 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 blah. He said, all right, cool, let me call you back. So he got up the phone. He called Milt. Over the phone, he said, you know, well, Milt called me. He said, yo, did you talk to Todd? I said, yeah. I said, why? He said, he just got the phone me. I said, oh, that's what's up. He said, yeah, but he kind of flipped me out. I said, why you said that? He said, because we talking for about 5 minutes. And in the middle of the phone call, he said, let me call you back. I'm about to book a ticket. I'll be there in 3 days. And he was like, huh? He said, yeah. He said, well, why are you coming so soon? He said, because I need to see you. He said, no, man, I'm good. He said, yo, I need to see you. I'm hearing what you're saying. I've been talking to Lee, but I need to see you. That's how I roll. That's how I roll with my people. You know what I'm saying? So this trip to Atlanta, people are like, yo, why are you going to Atlanta? Why are you going to Atlanta? Because I need to see my people. My brother's been working like a Hebrew slave. He works for Southern Power. So, you know, with the hurricane coming, so on and so forth, we've been talking. I ain't seen my brother. You know what I'm saying? So I told my brother, I'm coming through. It's that simple. My kids are in school. The boy is up at, God, I hate saying it, but he's at the University of Alabama. And, oh, God, I hate saying that. And my baby girl, she's down at Troy. I'm going to go see my kids, man. You know what I'm saying? I talked to my boy last week. We were tripping out on the phone. Blah. Didn't even tell him I was coming. Just going to see him. You know, I got to go see my people. I got to keep in touch with my folks. I'm talking to my grandmother, whom, is more my mom than anything. So I'm talking to her, and we were talking about family and all that type of stuff. And, you know, she gets to talk about this person. I was like, well, man, what happened to that person? What happened to that? How did I know I ain't talked to him? No, see, that ain't going to be me. That's not going to be me. I don't do my people like that. If we fam, we fam. You going to know that at any given moment, Lee going to be at your door. And you going to love it because when I come, I don't bring no drama. It's all love. We going to have a good-ass time, and I'm going to roll out. I'm going to creep out just like I crept in. And you going to be like, damn, that was a good-ass time I spent with my man. I'm like, that's what's up. That's what I do. But we need to get back to that. We need to get back to that sense of relating with one another as a norm, not as an extracurricular or a punishment. You know what I'm saying? Rashi, you're out there in no man's land, in misery. I've been looking and plotting and looking and plotting the best way I can get my ass out there, and it is absolutely horrible. I ain't even gonna lie. You know, and I was talking to Sharon last night, my homegirl that came up from Tennessee, and she was like, yo, when you gonna come through to visit? And I was like, yo, it's too expensive to fly down there. What you mean? It's like 200 something. Whoa. You start hitting them 200 numbers, baby. I'm going from the East Coast to the West Coast. I'm cheap. I can't do them 200 numbers just to go in mid-country. Like, no. That's too expensive for Lee. I ain't even going to lie to you. Now, I'll come visit, but I had to work out something. I might need to fly into Kentucky and drive. That's cheaper. I can do that for one something. See, I can live with the one something numbers in the middle of the country. You know, to get to you, Rashi, I'm thinking about flying from here to Chicago, staying in Chicago overnight, which would be perfect, and then on Friday, just shooting over to Misery, doing Misery, then leave after the show, then come back and fly out. That'd be perfect. That's pretty much the best way of doing it. Plus, I can stop in Chicago, get me some mix, and keep it moving. So, you know, it's always about food, too, with me. But that makes sense to me. I'm just keeping it real, son. I'm just keeping it real. Have you ever had that Garrett's mix? That popcorn?
Never. Bruh,
let me tell you something. If you ever go to Chicago on your travels, and I know you still get around a little bit, you take your ass to Garrett's, and you go ahead and get yourself an extra large, and you will thank me later, because if you get anything smaller, you will cuss me out. That's how good that shit is. You go and get yourself extra large, and you just kick your feet up, and you start eating on that mug, and then you call your boy and be like, yeah, dog. I should have done this. Why did you tell me this? You just wrong. That's how you gonna act. He's like, you just
I'll
wrong.
I'll check it out.
Man, look, ain't nothing like. Now I know we got to cut you pretty soon because we ain't gonna keep you forever. But we do appreciate you coming on with us and doing your thing. Where are you next? By the way, that's a good question.
I'm currently living in Clovis, New Mexico.
Yeah, but are you on the road anytime soon or no?
Yeah. As far as so right now, I'm up here for I'm in Las Vegas, New Mexico, at this very moment with my fam. We're here for a Democratic Party SEC meeting, so I'm part of that. I'm also very active in the NAACP. So as soon as I hang up with you, I'm gonna throw my suit on. I'm about to go to a meeting.
Okay. That's what's up. Well, we appreciate your time. We appreciate you getting up a little early for us because it is early on the left coast. So I don't want to keep you much longer, but I really do appreciate you coming through, fam. And thank you for your perspective this morning.
I appreciate the opportunity. When I get back out there on the East Coast, I'll look you up. Anytime I can help out or just be educated myself, please give me a ring.
Hey, man. We're always here for you. If you need to come back, want to come back, just let me know. We'll definitely get you in.
All right. Appreciate it. Much love.
All right, bud. Have a great one. Peace.
You too.
Well, fam, I wanted to move on to the Iran deal as well, because the president is touting this as he wants to decertify the deal with Iran and saying that it was the worst negotiated deal that the United States of America has ever made. So since Iran is not keeping up with the spirit of the agreement, then it needs to go away. Now, you're talking about a regime whom already was hesitant to do anything with us for decades. We got this thing pulled together with our NATO partners, the Security Council partners. Everybody's on board. This idiot wants to come in and scrap it. Like that makes us safer. Like that puts us in a position where our troops are less likely to be put in harm's way. This cannot be good for anyone in the region. Israel, Turkey, Jordan, Egypt. This is a nuclear weaponized Iran. It's not good for anybody. No one. And for you to want to bring this forward, for you to want to just say to hell with the efforts of diplomats for basically the past 30 years easily, there's no reason to that. No rhyme nor reason to that, except for, you know, you're just not the smartest knife in the drawer. And we all know this, but to me it seems like it's a game of, or a situation of, because I am king, I can do whatever I want to do. And there is a lot of power in that. It's true, because you are king, because you are president, you can do a lot of things. But there's the responsibility of that power is what I think he doesn't understand. Hence the tweets, hence the speech, the shooting paper towels to victims of the hurricane in Puerto Rico like he's shooting hoops. No contact, no hugs, no direct words of encouragement or condolence from the President of the United States of America, cordoned off by the Secret Service in the middle with paper towels, throwing them at the crowd like he's shooting hoops. What? We elected this dude. We as a nation elected this dude. We fucked up for a good minute, because this here, all of this is no bueno. I'm talking to a young man yesterday, and he says, you know, thank God for President Trump that the stock market is just churning. Ooh, whoa, wow. How does that happen? Well, you know, businesses and were hesitant to hire because of all the regulation, and understand that 90% of all jobs are created by small businesses, and Obamacare, okay. But let's understand something, that, again, this month is the first month, I'm sorry, last month was the first month that we did not have public sector job creation in the black. That was under Obama. Businesses tend to project all investments, especially capital investments, be it buildings, equipment, and or people, at least a year ahead of time. So with that all being said, how is this the Trump effect? Now, let's be honest. This is the end of Q3. September was the end of Q3. Now we're into Q4. A number of businesses have closed their books, be it between Q2 or Q3. The rest of them will close their books in Q4. So spending will start again as of 1 October, or the bulk of them, I'm sorry, a nice number of them, 1 January. So since Trump has taken office, let's understand the projections have been made starting 1 October or 1 January. Projections were not made 1 January last year about what was going to happen, because the election wasn't until November last year. You did? And with that uncertainty of who was going to win and how things were going to change, you don't make huge decisions based off what you hope are going to happen. You base them off of what you know is going to happen, for the most part. Right? So this is Trump's economy now. This is his stock market now. I give him that. I give him that credit. And not too long in his stock market, took a nice little nosedive. Not only because of his cry for the decertification of the Iranian deal, but also for the lawsuits that are coming behind the birth control measures. You see. Now, what we don't want to have happen is give the orange one too much credit for shit that he has not done yet. So now, Mr. And I told you, it hurts me. Now, Mr. President, we will see what you are really about, sir, because now it's all yours. It's all yours. The good and the bad is totally yours at this point. Totally yours. Totally yours. So, we'll see. We'll see what we got out of this bag of nuts. We'll see what we got in our fearless leader. Again, Puerto Rico is still recovering from the devastation caused by the hurricane. Aid is coming more steadily now. It's still slow. Electricity is still not returned to the majority of the inhabitants of the island nation. Folks are still standing in long lines just to get ice. They're getting ice so that they can preserve food, have water, so on and so forth. But we will continue to eye that situation. I said earlier today that Salias came back and said to Chuck Todd that the middle class had very much evaporated over the past few years, and that this tax plan that the Republicans have put forward will bring them back, because these tax cuts and deregulation are job creators, not job killers, like we faced over the past couple of years. However, we've just lost 33,000 jobs, which is the first time we've done such over the past 7 years. So please, let's stay grounded in reality, not fantasy. As we go forward in this week, let's stay grounded in reality, not fantasy. A portion of that continues in the NFL as the protests continue, but it's switched. Now we're focusing on the flag. focusing on the anthem instead of focusing on the injustices that caused the protests from the beginning. Let's not get twisted. Let's not get confused. There's still folks out here daily living in horror and in terror of those whom have been sworn to protect them. We need to do better. That's not acceptable. It's not okay. It's not okay to be crying in the face of a police officer because you're terrified if you pull over that they are going to harm you. That's not okay. It's not okay for a police officer to say, I don't know why you were afraid to pull over for me, man. You remember, we only kill the black ones. That's not okay. It's not okay. That's not acceptable. Stay woke, people. Stay woke. Please stay woke. Family, thank you all for joining us this week. We look forward to seeing you all on the radio next week. Until then, though, as we always say in parting, please be good, be safe. And I'm about to get in these streets of the ATL to do a little. I didn't even head over to Lenox Mall. I think that's where they got the garage popcorn. I just talked myself into a little stoppy stop. You all be good. You all be safe. Peace.